Our scripture reading this morning comes from the first chapter of the book of Numbers, verses 1 through 4, and then verses 44 through 47. The Lord spoke to Moses in the wilderness of Sinai, in the tent of the meeting, on the first day of the second month, of the second year after they had come out of the land of Egypt. The Lord said, "Take a census of the whole congregation of the Israelites, in their clans, by their ancestral houses, according to the number of names, every male individually, from 20 years old and upward, everyone in Israel able to go to war. You and Aaron shall enroll them company by company. A man from each tribe shall be with you, each man the head of his ancestral house." I'm going to spare you some details and move to the 44th verse. "And these are those who were enrolled, whom Moses and Aaron enrolled with the help of the leaders of Israel, 12 men, each representing his ancestral house. And so the whole number of the Israelites, by their ancestral houses, from 20 years old and upwards, everyone able to go to war in Israel, their whole number was 603,550. The Lord always blesses the reading of the Holy Scripture. And that scripture will need lots of extra blessing because it's probably one of the worst ones I've ever read to start a sermon for inspiration and anything. The book of Numbers includes a lot of counting. It includes a lot of math in it. It begins, as I just read you, with instructions that all the males who are over 20 years old are to be counted so that there can be a draft. It goes on to take account of all the firstborn sons. And the reason for that, and I won't go into details, but anytime a family had a firstborn son, there was a special tax to pay. And so there's this counting of all the firstborn sons. There is a counting of all the priests who are in the land of Israel. There is a counting of the livestock. There is a counting that pertains to the calendar so that you will know how many days until the next festival and how many days that festival is to stretch on. There is a counting of the offerings that you are to make so that you are able to offer the precise number of bulls and sheep that are required in order to please the Lord. So there's a lot of counting that goes on, which is why it's called the book of Numbers. Now, Numbers doesn't just include numbers. It also includes lots of names. And if you like reading the phone book, you will love Numbers because Numbers has page after page of names. We know nothing else about most of those people. A few of them, there are some stories that go with the names, but mostly it's just a list of names. And it's the list of names of people who made it out of Egypt. It's a list of names of people who died in the wilderness. It's a list of names of people who rebelled against Moses. It's a list of names of people who were in nearby nations who tried to attack the Israelites while they were wandering through the wilderness. It's a list of names of the younger generation, those who were not even 20 when their parents and grandparents escaped from slavery in Egypt, a list of names of all those who are going to move now into the promised land and take it in future books that we'll be reading in the Bible. It includes the name of Joshua and Caleb. You see, the people who escaped from Egypt, if you were 20 years old or over, you didn't make it to the promised land, which meant that nobody over 60 was going to make it into the promised land except for two people, Joshua and Caleb. So a lot of names in the book of Numbers. Now, fortunately, only about 40% of the book of Numbers is made up of names or math. The rest of the book of Numbers is made up of narratives, gripping narratives, in fact. Now, the problem is those narratives don't start until chapter 11 in the book of Numbers. So if you try to read Numbers, lots of people give up before they get to the stories. But once you get to the stories, you'll notice that there's nothing quite like them that we've read so far. Of course, Leviticus has virtually no stories. And there's this gripping short story in the book of Exodus. And then there are the stories of Genesis, which trigger our imagination and delight us. But when we get to the stories in the book of Numbers, those are stories that begin to take on a different quality. These are stories that begin to get under our skin. These are stories that begin to push us into thinking deeper than maybe we want to think. These are stories that begin to remind us of ourselves. And they can become haunting as we read them and begin to think about them. The stories in Numbers sometimes will make us giggle, such as the story about a talking ass who gives a lecture to his writer, or her writer, rather. Some of the stories in the book of Numbers will make us groan, such as a recurring story about how the people keep forgetting the power of God that helped them in the past, and they keep failing to factor God's present into their future. Some of the stories of Numbers will make us chuckle, such as when a group of women confront Moses, and we see the first woman's rights movement, and it's successful in the book of Numbers. Some of the stories will make us angry and confused. There's a story in the book of Numbers about how the soldiers went and defeated an enemy army and killed all the men that were in that army, and then God got mad at them because they didn't also kill the women and children. And when you read that story, that will be very disturbing and kind of make you think whether you want to read on or not. And kind of make you think about maybe we like to point to other religions and say how violent their stories are, but we've got them ourselves. And then there will be stories in the book of Exodus, in the book of Numbers, that will leave us frustrated. When we see how Moses was treated by his own people, those stories are going to frustrate us as we read them. And the stories of Numbers are going to make us think. We're going to read about Moses who is so angry with his people, and yet he still has to lead them. And how does he pull that off? We'll read stories about that in the book of Numbers. Now, the book of Numbers, with all of its stories and its math and its roll call of names, actually hangs together as a cohesive narrative because it is a narrative covering the 38 years, of roughly a 38-year period, starts right after the slaves have left Egypt, and it ends right before they're ready to move into the Promised Land. So it's a cohesive story covering that period of time as they wander in the wilderness. As we read through the book of Numbers, the people of Israel are going to be wandering through what the modern-day countries of through territory that belongs to modern-day countries of Egypt and Jordan and Palestine and Israel, a little bit of Syria, and perhaps even Saudi Arabia. So it's a group of people wandering around there. And we can't talk about the book of Numbers without talking about some of the astonishing numbers that appear there. We read in the scripture this morning that when they did the census of everybody, of all the males that were 20 years old and above, that there were 603,000 plus men that were age 20 and above. So that means if we continue to think that out, that meant that there were between 2 and 3 million Israelites that poured out of the land of Egypt. And they were pouring into the Sinai desert where there's virtually nothing to sustain them. This would be 2 to 3 million would be as though the whole city of Chicago just emptied out. That's a lot of people. And there's not a trace of archaeological or historical evidence. So a huge number of people pouring out of Egypt is what the book of Numbers tells us. And we got to figure out what to do with that. That number just staggers us. And we're not, it's almost hard to believe. And when we continue to do some of the demographic math, given the statistics that the book of Numbers gives us, we can calculate that each man in Israel fathered somewhere around 90 kids. Got to do the math, but it's in there. And this would insinuate that the Hebrew women were the most robust women ever in history. The numbers, they stagger. So when we read the book of Numbers, we come across these extraordinary, incredible numbers. And it's not the first time in the five books of Moses that we come across numbers like these. I mean, it's in the five books of Moses that we also see that Methuselah lived 969 years and Noah started the ark at 600 years. The five books of Moses give us these extraordinary, incredible, imaginative numbers. And so a rule of thumb that I follow, it's helpful for me when I read statistics in the books of Moses, is I don't get stuck on whether these numbers are plausible or not. I mean, that'll just lead you down a rabbit hole. Instead, I ponder what the numbers are suggesting. What are these numbers suggesting about the capacity of people to do things that maybe we underestimate? What are these numbers suggesting about the capacity of a group of people, about the resources that a group of people have? What are these numbers suggesting about the strength of a people that sometimes maybe only God can see? What are these numbers suggesting about the resources that God provides people? What are these numbers suggesting about the fact that every day we face a lot more impossibilities than we realize, and yet God constantly is with us? So I suggest that instead of getting caught on the plausibility of numbers as we read the five books of Moses, that we ponder the things that they're suggesting to us. Now, there are some books of some statistics in the book of Numbers that seem to make pretty much common sense to us. For instance, it's in the book of Numbers that we're told that if a neighbor does damage intentionally to another neighbor, that you must make restitution plus 20%. Seems like pretty common sense. It might put some lawyers out of business, but it's in there. There's another number in the book of Numbers saying that there's a mandatory retirement age for priests, which is 50. If we still follow that, you wouldn't have to put up with me. You would have never met me, probably. So, but there's a mandatory retirement age in the Bible for priests. Now, in addition to the numbers and the statistics, the data, there are also instructions and images. Those of you who are in a Revelation Bible study class with me, we'll notice that it's in the book of Numbers that we see lots of lampstands and we see trumpets blowing and hear about that. And that's where Revelation borrows heavily from the book of Numbers, as well as it borrows from many other books as well. In the book of Numbers, there are also some procedures that people can follow. For instance, the book of Numbers tells us that if a man suspects his wife of cheating, but he has no evidence, the procedure to be followed, spelled out in the book of Numbers, is this. He should take his wife, even though he has no evidence, he should take her to the priest, and the priest should dishevel her hair and then make her drink water that's been mixed with dirt. And if her womb drops, whatever that means exactly in the ancient text, then she is surely guilty and will be put to death, even though there's no evidence that the husband can come up with. If, on the other hand, her womb does not drop, then no problem. Everybody go home and just forget about it. So, Book of Numbers. Interesting things there. We still have a little bit, we still have traces of some of that thinking. There's a delightful story in the Book of Numbers about Balak, who was a king of Moab. And when Balak saw all of these Israelites marching toward him, these millions of Israelites marching toward his kingdom, he got scared. He was afraid that he was going to be overrun and overthrown by all of these Israelites wandering through the desert. And so he decided the best way, he knew he couldn't fight them with his army. His army wasn't big enough. So he decided he would hire someone to curse them, that might be the best way to stop them. So the guy who was the most renowned curser in the whole ancient world was Balaam. So this Moabite king sent for Balaam to curse the Israelites. Well, Balaam knew that he wasn't supposed to do that. The Lord had already told him in a dream, but he decides to go anyway just to visit the king and find out how much money the king may fork over for a good cursing of the Israelites. Well, while Balaam is on the way, he's riding his ass down the road to go visit the king of Moab. And the Lord, of course, very displeased, and so the Lord sends an angel to stop him. And the angel stands there right in the roadway, very, very threatening. Well, Balaam can't see the angel trying to stop him. All he can see, he just sees the roadway. But the ass sees the angel. And so the ass, at first sight of the angel, wanders off into a field in order to avoid trouble. And then the next time he sees the angel, he jerks up against the wall to try to avoid trouble. And then the third time, when he sees the angel with a flaming sword ready to cut Balaam's head off, the ass simply lies down in the roadway. Well, of course, Balaam is livid because he doesn't know why his ass is acting this way. And so he just explodes, and with cursing. And by this time, the ass has had enough. And he turns around and he opens his mouth and he speaks to Balaam. He says, "What is wrong with you? Have I not been faithful to you all these many years? Do you not see why it is that I'm not going forward on this road?" And suddenly Balaam's eyes are open and he is able to see. And it's a remarkable story about how the one who plays the ass at the beginning of the story is not the same as the one who plays the role at the end of the story. And Numbers gives us, there's nothing quite like it in the Bible. There's another very profound story in the book of Numbers. It appears in the later part of, about the middle of the book. And it's a story of Moses sending 12 spies into the promised land to see, to scout out the land and come back with a report. And so they do. And they report that it's a very good land. In fact, they give it a name. They say it's a land of milk and honey. It's so prosperous. It's a wonderful place. We should, this is the promised land for us. The trouble is, of the 12 spies who went up there, they had an argument among themselves as to whether or not they should actually try to go there to this promised land or whether they should just stay back in this wilderness area. And it was 10 to 2, and they got the people all involved. Before long, everybody was arguing about what they should do and what they shouldn't do. And the 10 spies who didn't want to go forward, who didn't trust God, had whipped up so much negativity that it was going to be impossible for the people to go there. And the only two who argued to move ahead were Caleb and Joshua. But in the end, that negativity that spread through all the people destroyed the future for those people. And that whole generation, save Joshua and Caleb, ends up dying in the wilderness. When we read the book of Numbers, we are disturbed at stories that keep recurring. We are disturbed that people keep wanting to go back to the way they used to do things in Egypt rather than to move forward to a new and relatively unknown way of life that they were going to have in the promised land. And that story keeps recurring. The people just want things to be the way they were. Another story that keeps recurring is the story of the conflict between the people and Moses, the people and their leaders. And constantly the people are at odds with their leaders, with Moses, and they're constantly complaining and murmuring and trying to undermine Moses' leadership out there in the wilderness. Another story that keeps recurring is that the people keep focusing not on what they need, but on what they want. What they need is to be kept alive. What they need is to keep moving on. What they need is to find a way for their community to be able to sustain themselves. But what they want, and it gets very graphic in the book of Numbers, what they want is they really want a hamburger with onions and pickles. It says cucumbers in the book of Numbers rather than pickles, but they keep focusing on what they have a craving for as opposed to what they need. And that story, it gets to wear on you because it just keeps coming up over and over in the book of Numbers. And so, as we're doing with all these books in the Bible, I'm asking myself, what's the bad news in the book and what's the good news? And these are my opinions. And as you read these books, you may have opinions of yourself, for yourselves. But as I read Numbers, at least this time around, it seems to me that the bad news of Numbers is that it's really hard to lead a group of people anywhere. It's really hard to get people to move on. Because if you're a leader, first of all, you have to gather people together. And when you gather people together, sometimes they bring their worst instincts. And they feed off of each other's negativity and off of each other's pessimism. And it's really hard to lead a group of people. It doesn't matter whether it's trying to lead your family or whether it's trying to lead maybe a group that you've been elected to be the leader of, or whether it's trying to lead in a business or trying to lead in some cause that you believe in, or lead in a church. It's really hard to lead people. That's the bad news of Numbers, and it keeps coming to us over and over again. And it's really hard to lead people in part because the future is always unclear to us. And if you're a leader, you've got to lead people into the future, and nobody really can see the future clearly. A lot of times people think they can see the past clearly, although that's a little questionable. I mean, psychologists have pretty much proven that the human mind tends to filter out the worst parts of the past. It's just a way the mind is merciful to us. We tend not to remember the very worst things of the past. We tend to see the better things of the past. We often tend to look at the past through the fog of nostalgia. And so it's very difficult to lead anybody into a future that they're not quite able to picture yet. Moses, we feel such sympathy for Moses when we read the book of Numbers. Because here he is, and in the 16th chapter of Numbers, a group of people try to undermine his leadership, and they try to stop him, and they say to him, "You've gone too far." That's their complaint. "You've gone too far. You've claimed too much power. You're doing too much here." And here's Moses, and you stop to think about, well, what are the options available to him? He can't resurrect the past. It's not in his power to do that. Although that's what a lot of the people want, is for him to make the past real again. He can't do that. He can't just leave the people like he found them. They're going to die there if he just leaves them like he finds them. And he can't get them to the promised land tomorrow. He can only lead them incrementally, so that day by day, people say, "I don't think things are getting any better." Because that's what it means to lead people incrementally, is you go for long periods of time and people can't see that there's any progress. And so here's Moses, but the people are blaming him for all their frustrations and all their disappointments. They do all they can to disable and to undermine his leadership. The bad news of Numbers is poignantly expressed in the 11th chapter, where Moses finally says to God, "I can't do this anymore. I'm not able to carry these people alone. They are too heavy for me." That's bad news of Numbers. But the good news appears in the very same chapter. The good news of Numbers is this, that God never leaves us ever alone in the wilderness. God is always there, even though we may not see. The irony is that while Balaam couldn't see the danger, oftentimes God's people don't see the help. And so in the 11th chapter of Numbers, God says to Moses, "You don't have to do this alone. There are 70 people out there and they also have my spirit. And they'll help you. You need to talk to those people. You need to rely on them. You don't need to do this alone. God assures Moses, I'm still with you. You're not alone. You're not alone when it comes to other people helping you. You're not alone when it comes to me being there. As the 11th chapter of Numbers moves on, there's this part where God says, now go get these people and talk to them, and they will help you. And then God says, in this particular time, the people were upset because they didn't have enough meat to eat. God says, now, after you get these people to help you, he says, I'm going to give everybody some meat. He says, I'm going to give people so much meat, they'll have meat coming out of their nostrils. Try not to think about that too much. I know the flu bug's going around, so that's a lot of meat. And I wish it could have been captured on a YouTube video. So God says to Moses, I'm going to give those people so much meat that it'll be coming out of their nostrils. And Moses says, really? I've got 603,000 soldiers out here. We're in the Sinai. And you're going to give them meat? Really? And there's just a really short answer. God says back to him, is the power of the Lord limited? That's the good news of Numbers. Is the power of the Lord limited? How can we look at the lives we've lived and think the power of the Lord is limited? How can we look at creation and think the power of the Lord is limited? How can we read Genesis and Exodus and think the power of the Lord is limited? That's the good news that appears in the book of Numbers. God provides. Sometimes God provides us with things that are material. Sometimes God provides us with a sense of humor. And you know, sometimes that's all we need is a sense of humor. That's all we need. And it'll get us through some situations. Sometimes God provides us with collaborators. Sometimes God provides us with insight into a common sense approach to a problem that, duh, we should have known that all along. Sometimes God comes up with something creative and we get a flash of an insight and we never thought of that before. And it seems strange, but you know what? It's what God gives us. It's the path that God opens for us. So just as there's bad news in Numbers, there's even more good news there. Finally, the takeaway, very quickly, three things that are practical that we can take away from the book of Numbers. Number one, if the burdens we are carrying seem to be too great for us, it's time to take a step back from our fears and our frustrations and our flusters and turn things over to God and ask for help. If we find that's a practical takeaway from the book of Numbers, if we find ourselves getting more and more afraid, more and more frustrated, more and more flustered, step back, ask others for help, ask God for help. Takeaway number two, very practical. In the 20th chapter of Numbers, the people began to complain, in this instance, about not having enough water. An understandable complaint, given the place where they were wandering. And so God tells Moses, he says, take the people to this particular rock and command the rock to give them water. Well, we're in chapter 20 of the book of Numbers. By this time, Moses is really being affected by the negativity that's around him. And so Moses approaches the rock, but he doesn't command the rock. He strikes the rock. And I think that's a profound bit of practical advice for us to really pay attention to how we're feeling about things. Because when we're working with other people, we can become pretty passionate. Our feelings can be pretty involved. And there's a tendency to strike the rock instead of command it. And all of us are vulnerable to that. And for Moses, when he struck the rock, it had devastating consequences for his future And anytime we strike the rock instead of command it, when we're in the midst, no matter how we're feeling, we can't strike the rock. We have to command. We have to take our authority. We have to understand what our strength, and we have to speak it to the situation. And then finally, the third practical takeaway from the book of Numbers. It takes two generations working together to work their way out of a fix and into a better place. It takes two generations working together. It takes the older generation, represented in the book of Numbers by Caleb and Joshua, who understand the past so that people will not repeat the mistakes of the past. It takes the older generation, but it also takes the newer generation. We cannot, just by our own generation, work our way out of the past and into the future. It also takes the newer generation. The newer generation, that the people who haven't been poisoned by some of the struggles that have gotten into our souls. It takes the newer generation. It takes the newer people. People who can see things differently, who have eyes to see what's up ahead. Neither Balaam nor Moses could see reality. And it's that new generation in Numbers that's finally able to see where the Lord can take them, and they move forward. Two generations working together. Good practical advice as we move into the future. So the book of Numbers, skim through those first 10 chapters. Don't let them bog you down. But give some space to read the rest of it. It'll get inside of you. The book of Numbers.